Liebe Fans, hier ist Mario Theissen. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß mit F1 Weekly und natürlich mit der ganzen Formel 1 Saison.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula 1. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 455, September 2nd, 2010. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast is brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, Austin reveals U.S. Grand Prix circuit layout. Can Ferrari put it together and make something happen at home? Max says Flavio is coming back to F1 soon. And Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid and special interview with Jean-Éric Vergneux. Of course, he's the young man winning every race he practically enters, so that's going to be a great interview. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Absolutely great. Getting ready to fly out to Monza. A few complications, of course, with the Italians and our tickets.
Yeah. Italian ticket brokers do not really know how to count days.
Yes, Italian ticket brokers do have some issues. They want to ship my tickets next Monday, and of course they know I live in the United States. I don't see how that works, but anyway, I am working on the problem as we speak. But anyway, Austin reveals the USGP circuit layout by Tilk and Company. Looked very intriguing.
It looked like it could be a lot of fun. A lot of elevation changes. I like the huge elevation change coming out of the start straight. And it's a counterclockwise circuit, so I kind of like that too. Some of the stuff they threw in there kind of, melding some classic track type items and some of the more popular track items that are currently on the circuit, I thought was a nice touch and making those fit into the topography of the venue.
Yeah, exactly. It looks pretty exciting. Of course, $200 million to build the track, and then, of course, you have all the extra stuff surrounding the facility, including parking, suites, paddock. There's a lot of stuff to build, and building has not started yet.
Yeah, the one thing that I didn't see on that map that I would have liked to have seen more maybe would have been designations for other grandstands other than the main grandstand.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're working on it.
Because I know they had a bunch of natural, stands, basically berms on the sides of the track for people to watch from, which is pretty popular in American road courses. But I'm sure I could think of a couple spots. It'd be a really nice place to be seated.
Close to facilities, close to the bar,
exactly.
Close to the hot dog stand.
A seat under my butt and
I understand
good
all
stuff
of that.
Close by.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Steve. Mr. Tavo Hellman said the intention was to create a track that was both state-of-the-art and inspired by classic F1 venues of the past. The Austin track will feature several sweeping corners as well as the long straights into tight bends that have become synonymous with Tilk's designs. So there you have it. We certainly hope that the funding is secure.
And that they're actually able to execute this track.
Absolutely. Let's go right to Monza. We've got Monza coming up. It's going to be exciting, Steve. I'm going to be there. I'm excited. But can Ferrari finally put it all together at home? I mean, they continue to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. If the weather's good, I think they may have a chance. But if there's any question marks in the weather, I don't give them much of a chance because that seems to really mess up their strategy. They weren't exceptionally impressive at Spa. They weren't exceptionally fast. They weren't really competitive. I don't know how much of that was car and how much of that was environment, basically, you know, not being able to dial the car in for a specific, you know, for a nice warm track. But, you know, I know Fernando says he's not out of it yet, but they've got a long row to hoe to get back into it even.
I agree. And the biggest problem is a lot of people are saying that both Red Bull and Ferrari were not as competitive is because they did have to change their front wing and the flexi floor to pass the scrutineering, and that's why they are lacking pace. McLaren is insisting that they did indeed change some of those items.
Yeah, but I don't think Spa's a track where, well, the flexi floor may have been helpful, but I don't think the flexi wing would have had nearly as much impact in Belgium as it did in Hungary, just because of the type of track that Spa is.
Yeah, and it's going to be the same at Monza. We're talking long straights, fast circuit.
It's a fast circuit where, you know, teams are not even bothering to take their F-duct because there's not going to have any rear downforce anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and of course, this is going to suit McLaren tremendously. Of course, Lewis Hamilton is gunning for a win at Monza. Of course, that means he'll have a win at the four legendary tracks, sort of like the big five in hunting. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And of course, Monza is right up there now that he's got Spa under his belt. Of course, getting back to Fernando. Of course, Fernando has got to say he's still in it. He's got to keep the team motivated. That's his job.
Yeah, and frankly, he's in it until he's mathematically eliminated. So, you know, it's Formula One. You really don't know what's going to happen. You know, on a given weekend, somebody can have a really bad day, and he might be one of the guys up ahead of you. And when he's having that bad day, he gives someone else a bad day by knocking them out or pushing them to the back of the field.
Yeah. Fernando says, quote, "There's no denying that Monza will be very important at our home circuit. We will have to do everything to avoid losing any more points. A good result here would be a great boost. If things go badly, it won't be over, but it would be a hard knock for team morale." And he's absolutely correct. But, you know, this team is just, I think there's some managing issues, the way they're handling the situation, because the Ferrari seems to be fairly quick. They're just not getting the...
That seemed to be maximizing the potential.
Like Renault is right now with Robert Kubica.
Yeah, exactly, where they're getting basically every tenth out of the car that they can because the driver's just kind of driving out of his suit. He's just, you know, pushing himself so hard to get the most out of the car. You know, we see Fernando, he's doing it, but it almost, especially at Spa, it almost was like somebody put a bug in his ear and sold him a strategy that was really not a good strategy.
And not only that, but he's making those mistakes that he used to not make.
Well, the ones that he's not made when he's been successful.
Exactly, and it's killing him. And let's go back to the flexi wings that McLaren insists have changed. Jensen Button says they have changed them, and that's why they have lost pace. Christian Horner, he's insisting that they haven't changed anything.
No, because the part wasn't illegal. And it comes down to, again, you can say that they did, but at Spa, even if they had them, it wouldn't have, again, wouldn't... The Red Bull hasn't been exceptionally fast in a straight line all season. You know, it's been up there, but it's always been second or third fastest. And, you know, McLaren has typically been, you know, it's been... Basically, McLaren, and for some reason, it seems the top end of the Mercedes engine is really good in a straight line, whereas the Renault and the Ferrari are not quite so. And I don't think it was aerodynamics that was the difference. I think it was just the fact that the gearing and the top end of the motor was faster.
Keep up the good work, Steve. Christian Horner is also saying that it's McLaren's front wing that's flexing now.
So. Hey, scrutineering, check that out, would you?
I know, it's a little out of control.
It's classic Formula One. Hey, no, it's not us, it's them.
I know, but let's just get back to racing. Eric Boullier came out, talked about Petrov having that huge mistake in Q1, being out of qualifying immediately, but then finishing up, I believe, in sixth place.
Yeah, phenomenally good race considering where he started.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was unbelievable. Eric Boullier says it was a good race to put the car back into the points, starting from where he was on the grid, so he just needs to avoid this kind of mistake. Perhaps some good has come out of the bad, because it has maybe reminded him that he needs to stay concentrating, and it is not because he had a good result in Budapest that it will be like this every weekend.
Yeah, and the mistake he made in qualifying was pretty much a rookie mistake.
Oh,
basically,
absolutely.
Getting the tires over the curbs, especially on a, you know, on a post-wet track.
He was just coming onto the track. It wasn't a hot lap.
Right.
To make that mistake, just getting onto the track, your first lap, you've got to stay focused.
Yeah, stay the heck off the curbs, frankly. If you're just going around for the first time, you're not trying to maximize at that point. You just want to get your tires warmed up for your first lap.
Yeah, he's fighting for his spot, even though I think he will be re-signed because he's showed progress and he brings money.
Yeah, the two things that are most important in a young driver.
Well, it might not be important if this rumor that I found out there is factual.
Kimi's coming back again?
No. Apparently, there's a rumor that Renault, the French automobile company, may be considering buying back control of their old Formula One team. Of course, they sold 85% of the team to Luxembourg-based Genii Capital at the end of last year. And of course, you know, with the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix and all the brouhaha, maybe Renault was happy to get out of it. But of course, it's still called Renault. They still have a 15%. But apparently, Renault earned $1.01 billion in the first half of this year. They've turned things around just like a lot of car companies.
Well,
have.
The economy has flattened out, basically. It's not dropping anymore. People are starting to buy cars again. Yeah, it seems kind of silly to go back and buy it up again. But
well,
after a year.
What's going on? They've made a lot of progress. They have some success. The new owners have not put very much money that was hoped for in the funding in the recent few months. And what they have done has been piecemeal, with small sponsorship deals, you know, coming from banks. So I'm hoping Renault takes over again and represents Le Régie.
I can't deny that having the factory backing would definitely be a benefit to Renault, especially considering what they've been able to do with what amounts to piecemeal money and effort. You know, they've done exceptionally well. I could see them buying back. I don't see them buying back the entire team. I could see them buying back a majority stake or something. But I wouldn't expect them to go and buy back with the entire
85%.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we'll see what happens. They have success. Kubica and Renault have made progress each and every race with a few small setbacks. But still, next year, if this progress continues, they certainly can be contenders.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. With what we've seen this past year, it's not that tough to get up to the front. It's just a matter of being able to sustain once the season starts.
Yeah, and don't forget, 2005 and 2006 wasn't that long ago, Stephen.
No.
Champions of the world, my friend.
Yeah, but the problem is you don't have the same management team in place.
Flavio, bravo, 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 bravo. Well, that's the other part of the rumor, Stephen.
Yeah, but if, well...
bravo, fisico.
I do not understand why people even go and ask that man's opinion, that being Max Mosley. I'm not surprised. You know, he and Bernie are pretty tight.
They are pretty tight. They have lunch together all the time in London. And I'm telling you, I don't think Flavio will be coming back as a team principal.
No, I think if he comes back, he's going to be coming back as Bernie Ecclestone.
Exactly.
Bernie's going to basically work to hand the reins to him to control, because Flavio is a similar kind of character who's very good at working deals and running the show. And I think that if he comes back, he's going to basically be Bernie's right-hand man.
I agree. And, I'm looking forward to Flavio coming back. I think we need colorful colorful characters like
that. You need personalities in Formula One, just because it's what, you know, it's part of Formula One to have people that are, especially considering the driver talent in the current era is pretty neutral.
I agree. So let's hope it all comes true. Any predictions for Monza, Steven?
Let me see.
Now, come on. Red Bull is not going to be that competitive.
I think they're going to be exceptionally competitive.
Really?
Yes.
You're going out on a limb again.
Always.
Okay.
You know, they really haven't proven that they aren't.
Yeah.
You know,
now, of course, Vettel has those memories of driving for Toro Rosso, wet track, winning.
That is actually, I think, going to be a, kind of a, well, if it's a dry track, I think that benefits Red Bull more. Because the whole schlamazel with the way quality, you know, everything went in, you know, Spa was just kind of screwy with, oh, it's wet. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. Just kind of threw everything for a loop. But Red Bull, it's going to be between Red Bull and McLaren, I think. I think that, again, Robert Kubica is probably going to be, you know, he's going to finish fourth or fifth. Maybe even get onto the podium again. The way the regie has been going, the last couple of weeks and the showing that they put in at Spa, you know, Robert Kubica was that close to being on the front row.
Exactly. Very close. And I agree with you. I think Robert Kubica will be on the podium. And I believe Ferrari will shoot themselves in the foot again, trying too hard. And I think that's the reason Fernando has made some mistakes, trying too hard and not keeping focus and the big picture.
And not staying within himself. One of the things he did really well when he was at Renault was not push. He pushed, but he didn't push so much that he basically ran himself off the track.
Yeah, even though he's had some, he had big accidents with Renault, including at the U.S. Grand Prix. But still, what he's doing now, I don't know. I know people change; they get older. See what happened to Vettel. He's sort of out there, and there's a lot of psychological problems here with these guys.
Well, I think for Vettel, it's a lot more about the pressure he's under at this point in his career. He hasn't had a chance to develop a lot of experience for basically centering himself and getting calm and just kind of focusing on the task at hand and not letting what's going on around him get a little bit inside his head.
Absolutely. And I think reaching for the championship early in your career like that can be destructive.
Right. And I think actually, and ultimately, it's going to benefit him because if he's able to say next year Red Bull's just as strong, it's going to make him that much stronger for going for the championship next year. He's not going to make some of these childish mistakes, you know, and part of that is the driver that he is. It's like, you know, I was really getting tired of the Vettel bashing at the beginning of the week and over the weekend. It's kind of like, hey, he's a kid still. Cut him some slack.
I agree completely. And speaking of kids, motorsports history was made yesterday when a 16-year-old Nabil Jeffrey became the youngest driver to pilot a Formula One car in an official sanctioned test.
Wow.
16 years old. Of course, these were straight line tests. No left or rights.
That's not really. Okay.
But, of course, this was for Lotus. Malaysian team, everyone told me the acceleration would be unbelievable and the braking would be so much greater than anything I've expected, and it took a while to get used to. But of course, Kovalainen and Fozzie gave me some advice on how to settle into it, and after a while I was more comfortable and I was able to get through the day's plan. Very excited 16-year-old to drive an F1 car.
Yep.
That is pretty darn good stuff.
Yeah, depends on whether. Let's see if he ever actually gets to pilot one for real.
Yeah, at that age, he might have had to wear a diaper. I mean, that kind of acceleration can make a lot of things happen to the body.
That you wouldn't expect.
Exactly. Quickly, before we go to break, Michelin is considering coming back to the WRC. Of course, they were in there as BF Goodrich. As everybody knows, BF Goodrich is owned by Michelin, and we'll see what happens. Pirelli's still in there, but a lot of people are rooting for Michelin, but not everyone. One senior team principal says that it's great news that Michelin wants to be involved again, but you have to ask if this is the right time for open competition again. And frankly, it's not. So that's one principal's opinion. And to that I say, ha-ha! So there you have it. We're going to take a quick break. I want to remind the listeners that we have a special interview with Jean-Éric Vergne, of course, outstanding young racing driver. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, Nasser Hamid.
I got on the phone and called a girl, said, meet me down at Curly Pearl's boy. Na-na-na-na.
Na-na-na-na.
In my high-heel shoes and fancy pads, I ran down the stairs, held me a cab going. Na-na-na-na.
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 Oh, na-na-na-na.
Na-na-na-na.
Na-na-na.
Greetings, racing and musical regards from Belgium. Hammy hammers another one in the Ardennes Forest, Vettel hammers Button, and Weber continues to make his mark. In GP2, Maldonado remains muy macho, and in GP3, Wickens wins a wicked one and stays in the championship hunt for the season finale in Parco Monza, Autodromo Nazionale di Monza, my all-time favorite track. And later in the program, we have a Godiva goodie bag. You like goodie bags, sir?
I love goodie bags.
Okay, there's one coming up. This is a Belgian goodie bag for you.
Uh-huh.
We shall start with Formula One, win number 3 of the season for Lewis Hamilton, and he is back on top of the World Championship. Very impressive to be leading the championship ahead of two drivers who are no doubt in a better package. Mark Webber is making a strong case to be the top matador at Red Bull. Fifth pole of the season for the Australian, and another podium finish keeps his championship hopes fosters fresh, while teammate Vettel gives a taste of Victoria Bitter to Button. Have you had Victoria Bitter ever?
I have, yes.
Is it good?
Not really.
How about Foster's?
Foster's is terrible.
Why?
Because they're just not Belgian.
Oh, my dear. Oh, God.
And it comes in an oil can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the ads they used to do here, Foster's, for
designated driver? Yeah, I
remember.
Foster's is a drinkable brew, but it certainly can't compete with what the Belgians do.
Really?
They're professionals, and they do it in a divine manner.
Oh, my God. Okay. The young German whippersnapper did not impress Martin Whitmarsh in Belgium, who called his waffle junior league stuff. He's calling him the crash kid. Pole star Robert Kubica was on the podium for another good finish for Renault. You're supposed to say, ha-ha. And then Tavares Petrov also in the points, which is good. Vitaly is working hard.
He is working hard. Making mistakes, but also working hard.
Yeah, he's a rookie, so that's expected, but at least he's delivering. He's like Kamui Kobayashi. He's hustling, but trying to make things happen. Rubinho, your favorite, Rubens Barrichello, celebrated his 300th Grand Prix start by hugging and crashing into Nando. It was a heavy crash, and I couldn't believe Nando kept going.
I couldn't believe it either.
Jeez.
Yeah, they were making good jokes about it on the broadcast, about, hey, he's just going to start looking at it and go, hey, we take another couple more pounds out of that suspension. It's obviously too strong.
Mm-hmm. Of the 13 races run so far, Red Bull has started from pole position in 12 of them, and surprisingly, out of those poles, only 3 were converted into race wins. That's not very good.
And not by the pole sitter.
Yeah, and this is season is coming to an end now. They need to get a grip on things. Either need to select Weber, which I think they should, and tell
you
Vettel.
Mean a number one and a number two?
Yes.
Huh. You know, Fernando likes that kind of situation.
I wonder why. Okay, now your favorite driver, Lewis Hamilton, was heard after the race on another podcast saying he is blessed to have won in Belgium. Very impressive. He's getting very good kudos in the media about his win. Very impressive. And actually, Anthony Davidson, you know, where he talks,
UVA.
The BBC, Yeah, he said that, and I have 100% agree with him. He said if a championship came down to one race and all things were being equal, his pick would be Hamilton, because Hamilton is a junkyard dogfighter. I like that. Extremely good in the wet, too.
And making less and less mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course. The pebbles of Shanghai.
Exactly.
Remember that?
Yes, Grasshopper.
Yes, and that happened, same thing in Belgium also. Shades of, you know. But this time his fortune cookie said, you will win race.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Okay, of course, just my opinion, shared by a lot of people. Spa-Francorchamps, best racing track in the world. And, you know, some of us remember the great race and victory while it lasted for Lewis Hamilton in 2008. A little bit of that was played during the race telecast. And that was a great, great race. Serious machismo from all sides. Button undone by Bastian. There was a time, not so long ago, based on winning twice as many races as Webber last year, then becoming, and before that, becoming the youngest pole and race winner, Sebastian Vettel was on his way as the next Schumacher and Cage Rattler.
I remember that.
Yeah, not too long ago. And, of course, the youngest world champion. Still a long way to go in the season, but it is now time to realize that Red Bull, the hunter, has become the hunted, which sometimes happens in the jungle. If you ever watch Michel of Omaha's, you know, Wildlife Kingdom, one of my favorites from days gone by. Be it lack of experience or frustration, taking out teammate previously and now Button is not looking good on SV's CV. I crashed too much, not good. After the race, he was apologetic and said, and I quote, what happened, happened, and we can't change it now. Obviously, I'm not proud of it, end of quote. But at least the crash was pretty dynamic, I mean, pretty impressive. How he just kept going and speared into Jensen, our Jens.
Yeah, it was a mistake.
A German guy hitting a British driver. Have you seen this before?
Occasionally in Formula One.
Oh, yes. Did he think the Ardennes Forest was Adelaide 1994?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you think Damon Hill was a little irked,
twitchy.
But you know, it was a mistake. Yeah, we all make mistakes.
Absolutely. With six races remaining, he may now find his worst nightmare come true. This will be something if this pans out this way. His own teammate may not become world champion, but could very well help Lewis Hamilton regain his crown by taking points from the German Deutschen Wunderkind. And I think because there is no love lost there. And every man is going for a victory there, and it's going to be a doozy.
Not only that, but if Christian Horner changes his mind and declares that Mark Webber will now be number one, and the team will back up him for the championship, Sebastian Vettel is not going to be a happy young man.
I don't think he's going to listen to Christian Horner.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
He's not going to be a Felipe Massa.
Yeah, exactly. Red Bull gives you wings, but flapping sans love will only help Lewis Hamilton. This season is beginning to taste more and more like 2007, in-house fighting, handing the title to the man who came in from the cold, literally and figuratively. The loser from that season could be the hot winner this season. Time will tell, and we will see who will sink in the Yas Marina. What say you, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I thought it was interesting that Kimi Raikkonen came out defending our young whippersnapper, Sebastian Vettel.
What did he say?
He said that he's the nicest guy in the world, and he's a loving young man.
No, he didn't say that. That's too much talk for him.
That's true. But
maybe
he's
just the first part.
But he's
part.
In World Rally now. Now he can talk.
Yeah.
Because he's happy.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably something more like, nice guy.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah. End of story.
Had an ice cream?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or his famous when Montoya left McLaren. It doesn't affect me, so I don't worry about it. No matter how you ask the question, the same answer. But to each his own. Okay, in the money matters, Malaysian state oil company Petronas has extended sponsorship of the Malaysian Grand Prix for another 5 years. Lucas Di Grassi has become part owner of ADAC's GP3 team, joining fellow F1 drivers Webber and Ralf Schumacher as team owner in the series. And now we go to GP2, the final frontier before Formula Uno. More of the same as Pastor Maldonado wins the feature race. The Venezuelan driver is looking good to become the first non-European champion of the series. Alvaro Parente of Portugal and homeboy of Dr. Miguel, was second, and Romain Grosjean was third. Sergio Perez of Mexico won Sunday's sprint race. Guido van der Garde of Holland was second, and Parent took his second podium of the weekend in third place. Season finale at Monza, and Maldonado is looking good, and I think he will take the championship. His nearest competitor is Senor Sergio Perez. And if he wins the championship, I think PDVSA, the Venezuelan oil company, will write him a check for a few million dollars and we will see him. I think he'll be the first Venezuelan driver since Johnny Chicardo, which is a long time, but good to see another guy from Venezuela get into Grand Prix motor racing, race winning.
Now, is he managed by Nicolas Stoltz?
I believe he is. Actually, he is, yeah.
So, that's definitely helpful.
Yeah, but you know what is most helpful is performant. And,
yeah.
Nice guy. I met him a couple of years ago in Barcelona. And it's one of those things. You know, the rumor coming out is that Sergio Perez has sponsorship from Telmex, which is Carlos Sims' operation. And they also are sponsoring other drivers, including Esteban Gutierrez. And I read a report that their money might be used either to buy into Sauber or definitely put one of the Mexicans into. Sergio Perez right now has the most experience, but even Esteban Gutierrez, who is already under contract to Sauber, was mentioned. But I would hate to see Esteban jump to Formula One right now.
No, it'd be too early.
Yeah, too early. He needs to go. He's very talented and just go step by step. Okay, next step, we will talk about him. GP3, this was a bizarre race. Robert Wickens of Toronto, Canada, killed the clock in race one on Saturday to take the championship fight to the final round at Monza. As drivers were slipping and sliding and diving into pits to change to wet tires, Wickens stayed out and then drove under a yellow flag as slow as possible to cross the start-finish line after the race time had expired. These are 30-minute races. He was driving a damaged car after he had gone off and hit the wall when in the lead, and this is all available on YouTube. There was this, the rain here at one time was like the Japan race in 2007 when Hamilton won. What happened to his teammate? Kablamo, all on his own. But we all make mistakes. No worries there. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, you do. Okay. A win is a win, and congratulations to Robert Wickens on his second win of the season. Great, and this is race is also getting a lot of press. A great and close finish in race two on Sunday. So Adrian Tombe, who is running mostly in Auto GP series, is doing some one-off races here and there. He held off Alexander Rossi to take his first win in the series. He pulled out the same deal as Wickens did, not stop for tires. Everybody else did. And apparently Rossi was all over him. But it was one of those, you know, drive-out situations, so nobody had a big advantage. And it was a very close finish. And so I'm glad Rossi got second. Helps him in his championship. Esteban Gutierrez holds an 18-point lead over Wickens with only the Monza round remaining to decide the first-ever GP3 champion. So Esteban should clinch it. All he has to do, if he finishes ahead of Wickens in the opening race, it's over. So we'll see what happens. Wickens is very good too. You know, he used to be part of Red Bull. They dropped him. And I've been following his career since he was in Formula BMW. Yeah, very, very good racing driver. He is hanging out with Daniel Moraes, who's also very good, also from Canada. And they're hanging out together, living in the same areas in England. So, and I very strongly feel that Gutierrez, Wickens, and Rossi, they all will be in GP2. So, a little nice to know a few drivers in GP2, you know, who have Formula Uno aspirations. Okay, now we go to Formula BMW Europa. And some sad news, you know, I got an email from one of my contacts, and it's not officially confirmed, but it's pretty much, you know, BMW pulled the plug, but they were going to continue to support the series if somebody was going to manage and promote it, but that's not happening. So, wiedersehen to Formula BMW Europe. They were also in action at Spa. Javier Tarancón of Spain takes his first win of the series, of the season, I should say. Hannes van Asseldonk of Holland, he's from a town called Bokel, and I'm in touch with him also. He's a very good driver. He is in his first season, and he's now knocking on the top five on a fairly regular basis, so that's good. He was fourth, and is the best place rookie for Saturday's race. Sunday's race was won by his fellow countryman and teammate, Robin Freins. Final race again at Monza. And Frings is only 7 points behind the championship leader, Jack Harvey from the UK. And Robin Frings in the opening race in Barcelona got taken out by some driver in the early stages, so he did not score any point, and that's hurting him now. But he's made his mark. You know, he did very, he was Rookie of the Year last year, won quite a few races this year, and hopefully we'll see him in Formula Renault. What I'm trying to do next year, Mr. Rogers, is I've been to quite a few GP2 races, this and that. I'd like to go to some other events too, other series like Formula Renault, so I can talk to some guys in World Series by Renault. And also definitely would like to see a British Formula 3 race. I mean, this series, there was a time I followed it as much as passion as Formula 1, because a lot of drivers used to come from that series, and I'm still very interested. Unfortunately, they don't show it here, but there's always YouTube for action here, there, and everywhere. And this Frenchman, Jean-Éric Vergne, whose interview is coming up, he won this year's championship. So it's an important championship. And we will talk about their race at Snetterton. More of the same as Jean-Éric Vergne takes his 13th win of the season. Race 2 was won by Gabriel Diaz, and Adriano Buzaid won the third and final race of the weekend. Both Diaz and Buzaid are boys from Brazil. IndyCars from Chicagoland. Did anybody watch any of the IndyCar action?
No roundy round for me.
How about you, Mr. Fowl?
No, didn't catch any.
Okay, so we're all on the same frequency this time. Dario Franchitti was the winner. Dan Weldon was second, and Marco Andretti third. The Indy Lights race on the same track. James Hinchcliffe of Canada, he's another very good racing talent, was the winner. And second was Miss Pepperman of England. Formula Star Mazda, our congratulations to Connor Daly on winning the championship. And this is another American kid, Irish-American kid, who hopefully will be in some sort of a European series, GP3, British Formula 3. So times are very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to some races.
Yeah, and we predicted that Connor Daly would take this championship.
Yeah, he did very well. Anytime you're doing well in your rookie season with good competition, then, you know, it's like a signal, I'm coming through. So that, good congratulations to him. MotoGP from Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Some members of the F1 Weekly Familia were there. Danny Pedrosa was the winner for Honda, followed by local yokel pole sitter and pole sitter Ben Spies. This kid is going places. Jorge Lorenzo was third, first time this season. He did not win or place second. This guy has really made all, not that he could not do it on his own, but with Rossi having some problem, he has really grabbed the opportunity, and he's going to win the championship, hopefully. A man from Mallorca looking good to take the title this year, and this was very, very sad. Actually, I read it first on the F1 Weekly Forum. Some very sad news from India over the weekend. 13-year-old Peter Lenz was killed after being struck by another bike of a 12-year-old kid, Xavier Zayat. Lenz had fallen off during the warm-up lap of a support race when the accident occurred. Very sad and tragic. And you know, the thing is, unfortunately, these things happen in motorsports. You can never make it 100% safe. But to have a kid who is a teenager at this age, that's just terrible. Very, very sad. Okay, so we'll take a break and we shall return.
We're talking about a goodie bag, aren't we?
Yeah, a spa goodie bag.
Okay, it's tea time at F1 Weekly.
PG.
We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW Americas and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
Hi, this is Robert Wickens from Canada, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Bonjour, je suis Olivier Panis, et vous m'écoutez, l'article est pour F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now, our Belgian goodie bag.
Yes, sir, it's the Godiva goodie bag, back to Spa, and look at some famous events at this wonderful racing track. You know, the scenery is so beautiful at Spa, when they were showing the pan shots, it's just incredible.
It is. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And I need to have this race not happen in the last 3-4 days of the month or the first few days, so I can make a run there. And, you know, maybe I'll go to a World Series by then. British F3, I think, goes there also. But it'll be awesome to see. Actually, a smaller race will be better, so you have more access and they're not so tight on security.
But the Mall Series goes there too.
Yeah, it will be very nice to walk around the track and go to Malmedy and Stavelo and all these places. Fantastic. Okay, Spa-Francorchamps was on the original F1 calendar in 1950, and it has importance for American racing fans quite a bit, actually. In 1956, Harry Schell scored the first championship point in Formula One Grand Prix for an American driver by finishing fourth. So there you have it. And then Mr. Jim Clark opened his tally of 25 wins at Spa in 1962 with a very impressive performance. And not to plug GrandPrix.com, people who have access to other books or magazine or websites, they can go to the Belgian Grand Prix of 1962 and read the race report. A very, very impressive performance from Jim Clark. Highly recommended. And of course, this is the track where Jackie Stewart had his big accident where he was strapped in his car with fuel petrol all around. And that's when he started his safety crusade, so good for him. 1967, first All-American win in Grand Prix racing since the 1921 triumph of Jimmy Murphy in the French Grand Prix as Dan Gurney takes the checkered flag in his California Santa Ana-built Eagle. Next, the following season was the first Grand Prix win in 1968 for McLaren, which was also mentioned on the Speed TV broadcast. Bruce McLaren in the cockpit.
Very exciting.
Yes, absolutely. And it was 1970 was the final Grand Prix win for Mexican star Pedro Rodriguez. Oh, this is very important. F1 debut of a driver who had to sleep in youth hostel during the 1991 Belgian Grand Prix weekend, as Jordan's team did not bother to book a hotel room for him. This year at Spa, he was making his second debut in much more palatial settings. If you still don't know who this driver is, please call and ask Ralph Schumacher for his brother's name. Ralph is talking to the common man these days, and I should know. Hey, of course, you know, Michael Schumacher made that debut, and what a debut it was in the beautiful 7-Up Fuji-sponsored green Jordan car.
Who powered that car?
Ford at that race. Yeah. But then they were powered by... Did your people power that car? I don't think so. A Peugeot, but not Renault.
No, not the Régie.
It'd be fun to find someone that was in that hostel with Schumacher that night just to see what his attitude was like.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he was very excited.
I'm sure. It's what's amazing is 91, he debuts there, and in 92, he gets his first Spa win there.
Oh, absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what happens when you got some serious talent and you're very serious about your business. And this was no Juan Pablo Montoya type operation, you know. I'm going to kick ass, take names. I want a hot dog at, you know, Spa-Francorchamps, or I'm going to yell in the ears of...
That's the Dick Trickle program.
Yeah, yeah. That's why he's playing here now. But, you know, again, it's Kimi Raikkonen and Montoya. Very disheartening, you know. So much talent and just... but, you know, I guess people have to do what they have to do.
I agree.
We're just the common people watching racing and commenting. The podium podcasters. Okay, is there a Podcasters Association of America or the world or something like that?
Are you telling me you want to unionize or something? So you can pick it out front for higher
wages? I would like to drop some.
Benefits? Next thing, you're going to ask me for 401k contribution?
Oh, wow. That's an idea.
Or wages. Even. Just wages.
Yeah. Okay, now let's see where we are. 1998. Damon Hill gives Eddie Jordan his first F1 victory, while David Coulthard invites Michael Schumacher for an up-close and personal screening of Play Misty for Me. The first time ever I saw your rear wing. You were at that race, right?
I was at that race. I remember it. It was exciting. It was damp. It was wet. But I found parking.
Which I think is a big issue in Spa.
Well, you park out, you know, in fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how Bubbles Horsley and James Hunt met. The cars, this is in the 70s, you know, cars. I don't know if it's Spa or Zolder, but it was in the cow pastures of Belgium.
No, I believe it. Yeah, you're out there in the fields with the cows.
They were headed for the loo or coming out of the loo and ran into each other. And the story was fantastic.
I don't want to know any more details.
No, the story that I've heard is that Bubbles Horsley was the driver, which is true, for Lord Haskett, and they were buddies. And he was going nowhere, and he ran into James Hunt there. And James Hunt was, you know, trying to get his career going. He was nobody knew him too much. So he asked him, you know, why don't you become the driver? So he appointed him the driver and himself the team manager.
And this all happened on the way to the loo?
Or, yeah, in the vicinity of the loo. So, you know.
Stranger. You heard it here.
Yeah, no, it's in books and magazines. And, you know, Bubbles Horsley lives in, what a name, Bubbles Horsley. He lives in France, somewhere in the south of France, as many rich British people live. So one of these days I'll have to go and, you know, seek out him and Peter Ward of Lotus. Boy, Peter Ward is a man who hates Nigel Mansell. You know, it's just amazing. Anyway, I see a signal to keep going. Okay, Ricardo Zonta. Remember our friend Ricardo Zonta? He was the meat in the heated sandwich between M. Schumacher and M. Hakkinen as the McLaren driver made a daring pass to take the lead and win the 2000 Belgian Grand Prix. That was a very impressive performance. And a pause. 2000A, my favorite last few laps. A real dogfight in tricky condition between Kimi Raikkonen and Lewis Hamilton. Stupid penalty takes the win from Hamilton and victory goes to Felipe Massa, who, in his own words at that time, was driving the last few laps like a grandmother.
He wasn't the only one.
Yeah. I mean, that was very impressive.
Yeah, too bad for Felipe.
Yeah. And 2009 was first pole position for Force India with Giancarlo Fisichella. And also, I should say, the first win for Kurz as Michael Schumacher pressed the button. And finally, you know, many, many thanks to Mr. Gabriel Rosenketter. We did a interview with him, which is coming up soon, for a wonderful evening.
That was a wonderful evening and a wonderful meal.
In the countryside of Campbell last Friday. And very nice meeting, chatting with him. And we look forward to more of the same with him. And when possible, other members of F1 Weekly Familia.
Absolutely. If you're in the neighborhood, give us a call.
Yeah, we don't bite, as Gabriel will verify.
Exactly. So that was definitely a nice rendezvous.
Yeah, and if you're coming to El Viso or Rancho Cucamonga, please keep us posted.
Or Escondido Avocado.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you lose your wallet there, we might replace it with one full of zeros.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Thank you for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial, Nasser. And now, why don't we just go right to this fantastic interview. Jean-Éric Vergnier.
Thanks for saying that name. Well, he is from Paris, and he has been winning race after race in the British F3 this year, has already clinched the championship. Nice, friendly guy. And this conversation took place in Barcelona at the opening race for the GP3 season, and he was doing a one-off race, and I think he's done a few more. And he will also be racing now in World Series by Renault because he's part of the Red Bull program. And they have booted out Brendan Hartley, which is very, very sad. So my thanks to Mr. Jean-Éric Vergnier. All the best to him. And thanks for his time. And please enjoy the conversation. Okay, folks, I'm here in Barcelona with Jean-Éric Vergnier from France. Jean-Éric, how are you today, sir?
I'm very good, thanks.
Okay. First of all, what part of Viva la France are you from?
Paris.
Oh, main city, good, big city boy. Okay, how old were you and how did you get interested in motor racing? Was there interest in the family?
My parents owned the go-kart track in Paris, so I began go-kart at 5. So, yeah, I'm racing since I'm really young.
René Arnoux also owns karting tracks. Have you ever been to his track? Have you ever met him?
Who?
René Arnoux.
Yeah, my parents know him and they're a good friend.
Good. I like him too. Okay, you have come on really strong in the British F3 and we see you here in the GP3. How many races do you plan to do?
I don't know.
Okay, so you might do some more, but British F3 is full-blown?
Yeah, British F3 is the main championship for me. Then we'll see this weekend how it's going, and if it's going well, why not do other races?
And how long were you in karting, and what are some of your best memories from karting days?
I've been in karting for 10 years, maybe.
10 years.
And racing, I began at 10. So, yeah, 6-7 years. And I won French championship 2 times. Vice European champion, 7th in the world championship, first French. So, yeah, I have really good moments from karting. It was really nice. I liked it.
Can one become a good racing driver without spending many years in karting?
If it's possible, you mean? If it's possible, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible, but then you have to get a lot of money because the expense is quite hard to get, and
the only way to get the experience is racing, and racing costs money in racing.
Now, when you're in single seaters, what is like the, some of the most common things that you learn in karting that you can apply in single seaters?
Everything. I mean, the racing stuff, the races, the work with the engineers, with the team. It's all the mental stuff, everything.
Now, how long you been part of Red Bull, and how did this deal come together?
3 years, and I won the French Championship in the Formula Campus, so I got invited for the test in Estoril. There were many drivers, and Red Bull took two drivers, Daniel Ricciardo and myself. So this is how I get in the Red Bull Junior team.
Okay. Now, I'm sure you've heard of this guy, Robert Wickens from Canada. He was dropped from the Red Bull program recently, and he said that they put a lot of pressure on you to win races and championship. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, of course, he's right. There is a lot of pressure, but I mean, this is the part of the job. All the Formula One drivers get a lot of pressure. So this is not easy every day, but this is the job. I mean, we're racing for this, and who expects you to be in the Red Bull Junior team, the best team, and then win the championship? I mean, this is normal, so...
You're not surprised. Okay, is Dr. Helmut Marko a cool guy to work with?
Yeah, well, I like him. Thanks to him, I got the opportunity to race with Karin in the British F3, and I've got my chance to go one day in Formula One, so I would appreciate this. And I mean, for sure, he's a hard guy, but he's right. I mean, if you don't win, he gives shit on you, and this is normal. I would do the same thing anyway.
Okay. What is your career path? How long do you plan? What's your estimated time of arrival in Formula One?
I have no plan. I just want to win the British F3, and then we'll see how it's going on with the opportunities and everything, and then we'll see.
Okay. When it comes to, let's say you're going to a series, when it comes to deciding what series and what team, does the driver have any say, or Red Bull makes all the decisions?
Yeah, Red Bull does the decision. For example, for this weekend, I had the choice to stay in Milton Keynes or go to the race. He said, you choose. I chose to try to come, of course.
No, in terms of a Red Bull spawn, like in British F3, did they decide that?
Yeah. You know, if I am in the Red Bull Junior team, that means this is like the best program for the young drivers. So I trust him. I trust Dr. Marko. I trust the program. And I didn't say anything for going in the British F3. I think this is a good choice. And I'm sure it's really good. When you say, I guess where we want it is in Formula One now. It's good.
We do a program from California. Do you, growing up or even now, do you follow American racing scene? Any interest in racing in Indy 500 someday?
Yeah, I'm looking what he's doing, Jean-Carl Vernet. He's doing a great job in the USA, and I think it's really good and clever for him to have been directly in the USA instead of trying to stay in Europe. And I hope it's going to work well for him, and this is always a good choice for European guys to go in the USA. But for the moment, I'm just focusing on European racing and try to go in Formula One day.
I appreciate your time. Finally, how about a message for listeners? We have listeners all over the world, if you want to say something to them.
To who?
To the listeners. Any message. You can tell them about your website.
I don't know. I fan and enjoy watching Formula One at Barcelona. I don't know.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Jean-Éric, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
This week's forum updates from Koala. The forum has been active again during the week, with members welcoming a return to racing after the long mid-season break. F1 topics have included Heidfeld's release as a Mercedes test driver to become Pirelli's official test driver in a 2009 Toyota, no less. Hamilton's fine for his hooning in Melbourne earlier in the year. The lack of a French GP. The possibility of a US GP in 2011. Shanduk's Red Bull drive in Korea. The P18 Grid of Shame thread, which greeted Vitaly Petrov as the Belgium representative. And of course, the discussion thread dedicated to Spa's quali and race, as well as Ye's Belgium stats. Non-F1 topics have also continued on. Tricky Dick took time out of his busy schedule defending the Empire in Cyprus to query the forum in respect to advice on buying a new laptop and phone, which only served to refire the Apple PC and Android iPhone forum debate once more with no conclusion again. The Countryside thread was active as usual. Discussions included Ye's cholesterol issues and forum-inspired solutions, Koala's purchase of a new car, the Australian elections, and Lion Bray's use of a film camera at a local air show. Spa threw a curveball to our prediction competition entrance with the likes of Alonso Button and Vitella not figuring in the points. This week's winner was Apex Slide with a 127, followed by Starfleet 76, Jackson, and Left Turn, all with 119. Koala continues to lead the championship with 1435, followed by Starfleet on 1409 and Scion on 1385. FIA Conspiracy makes a brief but welcome return to the forum, as did Desiree. The forum is back to full F1 topic discussion mode after the break. We have great bunch of friendly members with diverse ranges of views, which always leads to interesting discussions on a wide variety of F1 issues. New members are always welcome. That's it for this week. Koala. Thanks, Koala.
Thank you, Steven. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. Simply go to CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.